one of the things that's a big deal, I think, in our marketplace right now is that people are always trying to figure out how we can do better in what we're doing, how to become, you know, the go-to person in the marketplace. Now, you and I both know that we're not going to be a good fit for every single consumer out there, right?
Right.
But a lot of people understand what they're missing. So think of it this way. If you knew there was something better and it was something that was available to you, but you were never exposed to it.
You don't know the difference.
Correct. So you didn't know what you didn't know.
Right.
And in those instances, I think a lot of people have assumptions about things. And the truth of the matter is that just because you saw somebody doesn't mean you transact with them. Right?
Yeah, I agree.
So I think it goes down to the daily activities. So that's one of the things I wanted to ask you, Alex. So what are some daily activities that you do that are important to you that you make them a priority?
Cold call.
Okay.
Black and white, every day, you know. It's a daily activity. It's just part of life now, believe it or not. If I don't do it, I feel like my day hasn't completed. It doesn't feel right.
So explain what cold call means. Some people understand it, others don't.
So, you know, cold calling, the way I do it is if a property has sold in the neighborhood, right, and we can sugarcoat it and call it a warm call. So let's say for on Main Street, a property sold for $350,000. So I'll just drop a pin, pull up the data of quarter mile radius, and I'll just call every homeowner in the area and say, hey, Alan, you know, this is Alex calling from Century 21. We just sold a property in the neighborhood for X price and wanted to see if you had any interest in finding out the values of your home or any plans on selling, right? And if so, where are you moving? Why are you selling? You know, what's the time frame look like? And 95% of the time, it's never, yeah, come over, I'm ready to sell my house. I wish it was, but it never is. And they're like, well, no, don't ever call me back. Or it's a straight hang up. Or it's like, oh, yeah, it's so odd you called. Me and the wife were just tossing around the ideas last night. How did you know we were thinking about selling? And I says, look, it's genuinely a call because I sold that property at this address. And they're like, well, how does it work? What is the catch? So, you know, you tell them a little bit more about yourself. You tell them a little bit more about the company, what you do. And then you say, what is the timeline? And based on that, you set up that appointment.
So based off of that, say that you did a cold call. You get their attention. They express some interest. What is your typical follow-up plan?
So follow-up plan is something I've been religiously working on this year, right? I've actually dropped the ball on it over the years. And if I was as efficient as I am today, man, it would have been a game changer. So the new plan that we put in place is that if we connect with you and you said, hey, you just call me back in about 3 months, I'll put you on my calendar to call you back in about a month and a half or a month, right? Say, I know you told me 3 months, Alan, but I just didn't want you to think I forget about you, and I wanted to fill you in on the market and the stats. 3 months is really, really long, right? So yeah, and then after that month and a half, we reassess that timeline. Is it time for us to go out and meet them, or do we call them back in the time frame they gave us and we cut that in half?
So when you are following up, do you have other types of drip marketing or communications with them between the time that you set that trigger, if you will, and the time that you actually make that follow-up call?
Yeah, so I mean, we set them up on newsletters, right? Email newsletters, they get that. They get email marketing. I mean, and then there's phone calls and text messages, but those are not automated. They're very personalized. I am personally making those phone calls. I am personally sending them those text messages and just trying to be top of mind, I guess you can say.
So I know a lot of people out there, they don't like to be bothered, right?
Nobody does.
I know. But the truth of the matter is that sometimes that top of mind is important.
Very important.
And I think that it gets to a point where your level of consistency, either they're going to flat out let you know it, you know, or they're going to say, you're the only person that's been this consistent and something has changed.
Right.
So let's talk about change, because I think that's what triggers a lot of decisioning. So what are some things that I would think personally are important that people are motivated to make decisions about selling or purchasing real estate?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have my list, but what would be your list of things that are triggers?
You know, life events.
There you go. Yeah, tell me about them. Which ones do you think about?
You know, I feel like the myth at first is, before I answer that, is like, hey, it's the market. Let's do it now. Market is hot, or market is going down. It's not the market. Market is the market, but it's a life-changing event. Number one is, you know, a new baby, right? I have a client that's purchasing a house. They had no intentions of buying a house. They're buying a house. They're actually in contract right now because they're having a baby. They're like, we don't want to rent anymore because their last landlord gave them a 30-day notice, told them you got to go. So they had to pick up all their stuff and move into a different property, right? Somebody passing away, right? Downsizing, right? It's a two-story home. My knees hurt. I can't go up and down the stairs, right? I can't do this anymore. Somebody passing away, right? Or somebody's already passed away and the house is being left behind to the families, right? So I think those are some of the crucial life-changing events. I mean,
yeah, I would agree. So my list is very similar.
Yeah.
Getting married, right?
Absolutely.
Divorce.
Yeah.
A new child, health concerns, desire to be closer to a school that they want their children in.
Right.
Right. A death of a family member, a major event that's caused them to have to do something. So as humans, we have a desire to be comfortable. If you're in an environment, I believe, where the house no longer fits your needs because of a relationship that, believe it or not, people sometimes will sell a house just because of bad memories in a home.
Yeah.
And it's not like somebody died in the house. It's just, hey, we were married. We're no longer married. That house has so many memories. I need to move.
Yeah.
And do you ever hear these stories?
I had a client who sold a property saying, hey, Alex, I'm in a new relationship. My current wife don't want me to have this house.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
Because I bought this house with my ex-wife.
Yeah.
And we're still cordial, but this is a new beginning, so we need to buy a new house. We sold that house. We bought him a new house. And black and white. Now, they're great clients, right? It's a life-changing event.
Yeah.
110%. Yeah. Right.
So I'll tell you a funny story.
Tell me.
So when my wife and I were having our first child,
yeah,
I was driving a small Hyundai Elantra.
Okay.
And we were out shopping for, you know, strollers. So we were, at that time, it was Babies R Us. We're at the Babies R Us. And they literally had racks of these strollers. Things, right? And you had the very entry level, which is your little banana stroller, right?
Yeah.
The umbrella stroller.
Yeah.
And then you moved up and you've got the little nicer one that's got all the pockets on the bottom. And then you've got the, I would call it the Cadillac, right? Yeah. It's the one that cream looks like this crib basically on wheels, and you can put the baby carrier in there. It locks in. You know what I'm talking about,
right? I know exactly what you're talking about.
So here I am. I mean, I'm gonna take care of my wife, my firstborn, my beautiful, precious daughter. I want my wife to have everything.
Right.
So we go in there. We get the Cadillac version.
Right.
So we're all excited. I can't fit it in the car. Uh-oh. I take it out of the box. I can't fit it in the truck. So you know what I did?
Yeah.
I went and bought me a small SUV. It's literally so backwards that it created a life-changing event because of a baby and the stroller he wanted.
It's unbelievable.
You know, so
people, it's a need.
No, people will go actually and buy real estate and then realize that they need RV parking, right? Or they bought a brand new trailer, but the truck they have is a 1500, they need a 2500. Mm-hmm. And then you go and trade your truck in, you get 30,000, but this new 2500 is $90,000 for a truck.
Yeah.
People make these decisions. Bad financial decisions, and I'm guilty of it. A boat or anything like that, but the stroller was a great example.
Right.
We literally spent tens of thousands of dollars more just so we could fit a stroller in the back of a vehicle.
Yeah, I agree. You know, speaking of that, my brother-in-law and I, we talked about taking our babies in and out of a sedan.
Yeah.
And it was hurting our backs. Right? So we both ended up getting an SUV because it was a lot easier to get the babies in and out. And it was just, you know, convenient, right?
Yeah.
And it was more of a, not a financial sense-making decision, but it was just like, yeah, this is not working out. Let's go make that change.
Yeah. Right. You know, and it comes full circle, I think, because we have the ability to do something. We take advantage of it. In the United States, very specifically, there's a lot of credit that can be provided quickly. Oh, so one of the things that I bring up with clients all the time is don't make any major purchases, don't apply for credit, don't do anything to jeopardize your loan approval.
Yeah.
And very specifically, I say no cars, no vehicles, because you can walk in and drive out with a $1,000 payment.
So easy.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a mortgage takes, you know, anywhere between 14 to 30 days.
100%.
But you're buying a house. You know, for all this effort that you're putting into it, we're going to give you a set of keys. And this value of this property over time will continue to go up. Whereas vehicles,
yeah,
you don't have that return. Yeah,
you
right?
don't.
So I think those are big distinctions there between real estate and stuff.
I think it's more of an instant gratification.
Yes.
Right? So I think that makes a big difference. But I want to add one more thing to that list.
Go ahead.
And the other one is landlords.
Oh, yeah. Right? That's a very good one.
Client of mine bought a new home. Mm-hmm. Said, Alex, we don't want to sell our current home, and we want to turn it into a rental. And I supported him with that. And I said, hey, look, if that's what you want to do, I'm a big believer of rental. I am a big believer of buying real estate, holding, and turning them into rentals, right? Because it's such a great avenue to mm-hmm. grow wealth. So I supported him, and I connected them with the property management and the whole nine yards. And they were very happy, right? They're very, very happy. So I just got this call 2 days ago, and there's a sign in the front yard with my name on it. And James calls me and he says, hey, Alex, I saw your house that's up for sale and next to our rental. And I was like, yeah, how's that rental coming along? And he says, it's a disaster. And I says, well, I thought you were getting rents. They're like, yeah, we were getting rents, but these people have moved out. And what they've done to the property is unimaginable. Right, it's going to cost me at least $20,000 to bring it back to life. And he says, after I do that, you're selling it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it's a very good point. And one of the things that I think a lot of people don't realize is that you can hear all of the social media hub. Oh. You can become a landlord. You can buy properties.
Yeah.
You can do all these things. And there's different methods. But one of the things that I think is very important is they don't realize how much risk is involved.
It is, yeah. It's not passive.
No.
Absolutely not passive. You know, there's all these videos out there and social media saying passive rental, this and that. It's not passive. You might have a property management in place, mm-hmm. but there's still stuff going on.
Right? And I think a lot of that really is driven by the specific property.
100%.
So if you have a property that has virtually no mortgage or very low mortgage payment, you may cash flow, but the condition that property is when you started the rental and the time when they vacate may be completely different.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's just risk. And if anything, I think as a professional,
right,
you got to tell them the truth.
100%.
Because there's nothing worse than your responsibility to the client not being fully explained.
Yes.
And then the risks involved with it. Because here's the thing, when we express those things, we're looking out for their best interest because we've been down that path before.
Yeah.
And it allows them an opportunity to make an educated decision.
Right.
Right. And I think I like to do what we call milestones within the transaction.
Right.
So when somebody's starting a new purchase, I would say, this is the first step that you need to address. You know, we're going to be opening escrow. They're going to be asking for something known as an earnest money deposit. That deposit will be held by the escrow company for your purchase of that property. It'll be later applied towards your down payment and closing costs, but you're going to need to have that money ready and available now.
Yeah.
Right. And then we would go through the other steps.
Yeah.
And as we start checking off boxes, you know what it does for the consumer? It allows them confirmation of the things that you told them would happen, right? And if there's any headaches, you'd say, listen, when we get that home, you know, inspection report, there may be items on there that you think are deal killers. But the truth is that they may be maintenance items. But you have to have that field experience to be able to give them that feedback and say, this is not insurmountable. We can do this. Rather than saying, oh, no. But if you think about it, a lot of people, like big culprits, right? Yeah. A small leak, mm-hmm. right? Or something where they notice something in the house, but they were renting, they don't say anything. Or let's just say the water heater itself is not producing enough hot water. So they may call the landlord. Landlord is going to stick some tape on it, not necessarily fix it.
Right.
But home maintenance items are a big deal,
yeah.
right? So these are things that we see all the time that aren't necessarily items that will basically take that house out of the running.
Mm-hmm.
Because have you had, let me ask this question. This is a good question to ask. Have you had a transaction that started and due to inspections, the buyer backed out?
Yeah.
And later on, they're kicking themselves because they should have finished that house because they can't find one at the same price in the same condition.
Yes.
And when you think about that, do you ever go back in your mind and start thinking, I tried to explain them this is actually something that's not that big of a deal?
I really don't want to say I told you so.
Yeah, but it's true though, right? Because hindsight's always 20/20.
Yeah.
Because I had somebody that did that about 2 months ago. Okay. This house was up in Tehachapi. It was an older home, but the house inspected okay. It wasn't perfect, but they talked to their friend, and their friend's like, no, I would walk away from that immediately, right? They can't touch a house up there for less than $15,000 more than what was on that other property. And the person had the cash to do the improvements, and the fix was going to be around $4,500. But see, it was so short-sighted.
I think you got to have that conversation with your clients. I think you got to really sit down and say, go over pros and cons, right? Hey, these are all your items that are issues with the house. Let's just say I will do all my best and ask the sellers, hey, Mr. Seller, can you do these items for our clients? And let's just say seller says, yeah, I'll do it. Or worst case scenario, they're like, we are not going to do a darn thing. Take it or leave it. At that point, you as a buyer have to decide, how much is this going to cost? And are you okay with that?
Sure.
And in my opinion, if you go out to go replace a property, and I'm having this very conversation, like you said, nothing less than $15,000, $20,000, and it's only costing you $2,500, let's not let our emotions get in our way.
Yes.
Let's put this transaction together and let's keep moving forward.
Yeah. Right? I think that's very key.
Yeah. I mean, I almost had a deal fall apart, right? There was a rate lock extension needed, mm-hmm. and it was needed because the seller said, lagged on getting the repairs done,
mm-hmm.
right? The buyer's like, that's not my fault. Seller's like, take it or leave it, right? It was $215,000 purchase, right? And I talked to my client and I says, look, the rate lock is going to cost you $545, right? You've been looking for a house for almost about 4.5 months. Do you want to go back into that position and the rates are significantly higher than your current interest rate that you're locked mm-hmm. in? After talking to him about that and explaining it to him, Alex, you're right. Let's just keep moving forward. It is what it is. And I said, I'm very sorry that he does not want to pay you that $545, but he really doesn't have to. He has more buyers than there's inventory, you know? So,
but see, this is where I think being a professional is important.
Yeah.
It's communicating the truths.
100%.
But then also letting them know that, hey, these are the worst case scenarios. And if you can absorb that and understand that, you're making an educated decision. It's not all emotional.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, the difference between a mature agent and an agent that's just trying to get it done.
Right.
And I find this in loans as well. To be perfectly honest with you, it shocks me.
Yeah.
I was asked not too long ago, if you had to start over, would you get into the lending? And
yeah.
I said, no. And they're like, well, seriously? And I said, it's taken me over 20 years to get the mush between my ears to have the information to know what things work, what things don't work,
right.
And you build a strong foundation of knowledge, and then you're just adding a little bit of information. But if you had to start over, we find that people have a tendency to get comfortable with a loan product, and then everybody, they try to fit into that loan product. But is that best for you, or is it best for the lender?
One
because that's all they know.
All. It does not work.
No,
yeah.
And then there's certain things that I try to warn people, specifically houses that have solar, or there's something that's different about the characteristics of the property, or there's an issue maybe with title.
Yeah,
I mean, we have to read this. You know, a lot of lenders don't read the prelim.
Wow.
You'd be shocked, okay?
Okay.
They pass it off to their processor, and the processor then submits it to underwriting. And the underwriter then uncovers these things that they should have known about 48 hours ago, right? So the loan officer should read the prelim, look for red flags. I'll give you a perfect example. So I got a purchase agreement. The name on the purchase agreement for the seller was a trust. The signer was nowhere listed, okay,
on the trust
that we could see. So I get my prelim, and I ask the escrow officer,
yeah,
please get authority to sign documents to me ASAP.
Yeah.
They hadn't recorded them yet. So we lost 2 weeks because they still had to get this all worked out with their attorney, but the house at the market was under contract. Appraisal's done. My loan approval, okay, is already back. Even though I caught that early, I still submitted the file contingent upon the thing I asked for.
Right.
But see, if you have enough at bats, you know what to ask for before they become issues, because it should not be a buyer-related item. In this case, it was a seller. Yeah. And you know what the agent said? They said, we didn't know it was going to go this fast. But the reality is that in a market like this,
yeah,
with the number of transactions going, banks are just frothing them out to get your transaction through. Appraisers are on it. Things are moving really, really quickly.
Things are moving quick.
So because of that, it's something that you have to be at least proactive. Ask the questions. Because if you don't ask and it comes up to be a question later,
it's a problem.
Yes.
Big problem.
And think about it this way. If you're a listing agent, you have a listing, you accepted a contract based off of the merits of the buyer, right? And I'm not talking about a cash offer. I'm talking about somebody that's using financing. And then later on, you start seeing cracking in the quality of that buyer. One of the things that you're probably thinking of is, who do we have as a backup? Who can I call if this falls apart? Am I wrong?
No, you're not.
So then you start hitting milestone moments, times. You're like, we're 10 days in. They haven't done their appraisal yet. Why are they waiting? We have our prelim pack. And you're asking the question, what is it that I'm missing?
And I can't get a hold of nobody.
Yes. Doesn't that drive you crazy?
I want to go knock on their doors. Yeah. I really do. I mean,
accountability is important.
Yeah, it's very important.
Transparency, communication, integrity.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a bigger person to say, hey, this is something we miss. Let's see what we can do to address this. Because here's the thing. We all want the same thing, that transaction to close.
We do, yeah.
And we need just to help them.
Well, the way I look at it, there's no problem that can't be solved, right? As long as we figure out a solution together and all parties are happy,
mm-hmm.
that file's going to close. That transaction is going to come through, right?
Sure.
I think the communication is lagging. People fall off the radar. Right? Unresponsive text messages, phone calls, emails, everything is, nothing is coming back, right? And at that point, I'm like, this is not good, you know? So, I mean, if you need a little bit of time to order appraisal, I understand. Just communicate that through so I can communicate my sellers, right? Because I get on a weekly call with them and I update them on the file. And even if I have to say, hey, John, there's no update, I'm still calling John and telling him there's no update.
Yeah.
Right. So
one thing that I do with every transaction is I loop in all parties. So a lot of times you have your introductory email where they open escrow.
Yeah.
It includes everybody. I think the dog spot is actually on that email thread, right?
Probably.
But believe it or not, I will create a new group.
Yeah.
And I will email them milestones. Congratulations, everybody. Thank you so much for the opportunity to serve you. We are creating our disclosures and the appraisal will be ordered.
Right.
Great. Everyone's, oh, good thing. Here's your escrow number. Great. Now I send an individual email to escrow asking for my setup package, right? Then the next thing I do is, hey, appraisal's been ordered. Please let me know when they schedule.
You never get notified.
Well, I do, but it's still, I'm being transparent.
Yeah.
So then they notify me. I just got an email from their appraisal management company. They're scheduled for this date. Then I do another broadcast email. Everyone, the date has been set. Escrow information is in. I should have underwriting approval in the next 24 to 48 hours. Congratulations, loan approval's back. We don't have the appraisal back, but it should be back in the next 48 hours. Appraisal's back. We have some lender-required repairs. Here they are.
Yeah.
I can't send the appraisal to the listing party, but I can share it with the buyer's agent and with the buyer. They need to put whatever is required for lender's required repairs and say, okay, we have our prior to doc conditions. This is the date we're ordering the CD.
Right.
Once we get through those things, would you think as a listing agent, those would be valuable milestones? Because now you're going to your seller going, man, the lender is on it. They're answering all these things before you even ask. And it's helping us to move this thing along.
I couldn't appreciate you more.
Yeah. But see, the benefit of that is this. The borrower should not have any qualification issues. It should only be title and subject property. Because those are outside of the buyer's conditioning list.
Yeah, because they can't control that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As long as they don't spend their money. Add debt, quit their job.
Or go buy a new car.
Adding debt.
Right.
But, you know, that's coaching. That's education.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a few people come through social media, and one of the things they said is, like, I learned a lot of this stuff. You've already talked about it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you follow the things that we post, you know, they're 30 seconds.
Yeah.
So, Alex.
Tell me.
You tell me. What is your why? Why did you get into real estate?
Oh, man. So there's a little bit of background on that, right? I used to work in banking,
mm-hmm.
right? I started out at Wells Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
Then I became a banker, a personal banker, a business banker. Then I ended up at Citibank off of Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't see growth for opportunity, right? Like there was, I felt like my expectation was to be behind that desk for the next 30 years in that same position. And there's something wrong with that, but I was just going crazy. Mm-hmm. I cannot stand still or sit still in that case. I went to my branch manager and says, I want a promotion. Black and literally white conversation. So
yeah. I need a promotion.
I'm hitting my numbers. You know, it's a, if you think about a banking job, it's a sales job.
Sure.
Right? And I'm hitting my numbers. I'm like constantly coming in for my call nights and I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. I want a promotion. And she says, well, due to the current economic conditions, we are not opening any new job positions. So I'm just sitting there pulling my hair and I'm like, what does one do? Right? And I had owned one rental at that point, mm-hmm. right? And I follow a few people in the business, and I say, hey, I just bought a brand new BMW. I want to be like them. I want to make more money, right? I want to grow my career, right? So I said, let me get my real estate license. I saved 6 months worth of payroll, right, as a backup, because it's all commission-based, right? Mm-hmm. There's no other income. And I got my license, and I quit, and I got in. And here I am.
So when you got in, did you have a mentor?
I did not have a mentor. I didn't have my first sale for four and a half, five months. So my closing was, like, literally the 6 month out. Yeah. So it was very scary times, and I was working very hard. I had nothing else to do. I didn't know what to do. And
were you married at the time?
I was. Yeah. I was.
So are you getting a little pressure at home? To get something done.
Yeah, it was very scary, right? Like, oh, you know, you're going home and you have nothing to show for, right? It really messes up with your mindset, you know? Lo and behold, yeah, I still don't drive a BMW.
That's okay. You know?
it's a great career, very rewarding. It's a lot of hard work, right? It's a lot of hard work. So, yeah, people don't realize that.
Well, let's get back. What is your why?
I come from humble beginnings, right, where I wanted to play sports, but I didn't have a nicer pair of shoes and stuff like that. So I made a promise to myself that I don't want my child to ever be in those positions, mm-hmm. right? And for that reason, I'm just like, that's my why, right? If my daughter puts a finger on something, it's going to be taken care of. Like,
sure.
It's no problem. So truly, my daughter is my why.
Yeah.
Short answer.
Your why is got to be bigger than, you know, a paycheck.
100%. Right?
Because here's the reality. When you're dealing with sales, let's just be honest.
Yeah.
You make money only when transactions close.
Right.
Right? They're not paying you for picking up the phone.
Yeah.
They're not paying you for your time.
No.
You're not getting compensated for the money that you're spending with no return. But I think a lot of people have a tendency to say it doesn't work because they spent some money and they spent some time, but they haven't spent enough time. It's not just the money.
It's a long-term game.
Because unfortunately, there are some things that you can do that nobody wants to do because it's painful. You know, I learned a long time ago that the general concept of life is this. We move towards pleasure and away from pain. Mm-hmm. And when it gets to be difficult, you really have to dig down and ask yourself, is it worth it?
Right.
Right. So there was a study done, you know, for the last, I'd say, 100 years, and it looked at immigrants. And one of the things they found is this. When you come from a country that has little and you come to a country that has abundance, mm-hmm. and they're not going to stop you from gaining more through that abundance, then they felt like they won the lottery.
Yeah.
And then when they think that what you're dealing with is difficult, they think back to their time and they're like, that is nothing.
Piece of cake. Yeah.
It's simple and right. I can get past this. And I think once you get to the second generation or third generation, it all waters disappears. Itself down because they have no experience. It's all stories at that time.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely and I think that if you don't get back in touch with that concept
emotionally,
then it's never going to be something that you're going to drive yourself with.
Yeah. I think you're 1,000% right. So
I know you do, but I'm just going to ask anyways, do you do a business plan and do you have written goals?
You know, I actually have a mentor now in place and they've been in the business for 35, 40 years, sell over hundreds and hundreds of homes, a lot of homes, let's just put it that way, every year. Great people, they make sure I do my business plan every year, you know, and there's just some accountability partner that help out. So yeah, everything is a lot more streamlined, more efficient as I've grown in the career.
Now, yeah. Have you found that investing in coaching and mentorship has been a value add for you?
1,010%. Yes. I mean, I couldn't, I am all for it. It is very expensive, Alan. Trust
me.
No,
of course.
My wife thought I was crazy.
She probably still does.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, there's no denying that. She thought I was crazy when I told her what I was paying for coaching. But let me give you an example, right?
Sure.
When COVID hit, do you remember what happened with our real estate market?
Sure.
I was so depressed. I was at the house for 2.5 weeks, no shave, in my pajamas, playing my PS3, right? Yeah, I have a PS3.
And do you have the PS5 now?
I don't. I still have a PS3.
Yeah, that's good.
So I was playing my PS3, and then my coach calls me one. It's a weekly call, and she calls me. She says, and I pushed it to voicemail. There's no real estate. It's COVID, lady.
Dang. You're like,
and she calls me again. I push her to voicemail twice. She didn't call me the third time, right? And then week two, she calls me. I push her to voicemail, and I answered her call. Second time she called in the second week, she's like, Alex, what the heck is going on? Right? And I said, Lisa, the world is coming to an end.
Wow.
And I don't want to. There's nothing to do. And we're all going to die.
Me with my wife, my baby, and my PS3.
Leave me alone. She's like, get your back up, go shave your face, and go to the office and make your calls. Reach out to everybody and tell them on what's going on. People need to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
I sold 30 additional houses after that phone call that year.
Congratulations.
Right? So, I mean, if you put it in perspective, if she wasn't there, I would have called it a year.
Yeah.
That year, that month. Right, and I would not sell those additional 30 houses. So if you think about it, those 30 houses paid for a lifetime of coaching.
Sure.
Right.
Congratulations.
Thank
because you.
Yeah. You
picked up the phone eventually.
I did.
And good job, coach, because that's the accountability that's necessary in order to make change. Right.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I think we just need to have somebody that's been there, done that, or at least has enough big picture thinking
100%.
To understand why it's important to have the accountability.
Yeah.
And I know that you have certain things that I've seen as far as consistencies that a lot of people are lacking. It's and believe it or not, it's somewhat motivating, but also very frustrating.
Yeah.
It's almost like the kid that gets the good grades all the time. It's like, stinking. They're the always one. They're the curve buster. It's like, no, they just do their work and they study.
You know, it's an accumulative effect. Right? It's a compounding thing. It is stuff that I've done over the years. Like my current coach, Crystal, right? She's told me to do things that I've done year and the year before, and I'm reaping benefits from it this year, right? And I'm like, oh my God, Crystal. She's like, yeah, I saw the bigger picture, right? And I was like, yeah, I obviously didn't, but I still did what she told me to do.
Sure.
And it's just, you got to put things into
it's
action.
It's like a Karate Kid moment.
Yeah.
It's like you understand why you're waxing the floor, you're sanding the, you know.
Literally,
painting the fence. Yeah. You're like, okay, it's coming together.
You know, she told me to do this one thing, okay, about a year and a half, 2 years later, and I implemented those two things. And right now I have an appointment on Thursday from that seller. She says, hey, Alex, you know, you've called so many times. You left so many voicemails. I first of all want to apologize for never calling you back. And I says, no apologies needed. What can I do for you? She says, I'm ready to sell my house. Are you available this Thursday?
Yeah.
I will be there at 3 p.m.
That's
and she
great.
Says, thank you. I have one on the market right now. She says, Alex, you called, and after you hung up, you said you would send a letter in the mail. And I didn't think that letter would ever show up. And it showed up with the business card in it. And I've held on to it. And now my tenant has moved out, and I'm ready to sell.
Yeah.
And you know who told me to do those things? My coach did.
Yeah.
You know, she's kind of like pointed me in those right directions, and she helped me, hey, do these things after your phone calls. It goes a long way.
Yeah.
Right?
I think a lot of it has to do with the consistency aspects of what
100%,
we're doing.
Yeah.
Right? So that's awesome. And those daily habits are the things that drive long-term, because you're going to see changes in micro. But if you look back at the body of work and time, you'll see exactly what you created.
Yeah.
And once it becomes a habit. Exactly.
Said,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's something that James Clear and, you know, Atomic Habits talks about those things. It It's that, did you read the book?
I have.
You were talking about the 1% change and the bikes, you know, and this.
A little bit every day.
Yes.
A little bit every day.
And you're constantly analyzing things, but you can't go back unless you track.
Track, yeah.
Tracking, I think, is the thing that I'm not as strong as I should be.
Neither am I.
But if you are tracking something.
Yes.
Then at least you can find out what you've done.
You get to look back and see how you can do things differently going forward, and it helps you excel. Right? You know, people talk about level up.
Yeah.
What are you leveling up if you're not really tracking anything, right? So it's so important to track. I'm really not good at it, but again, my coach, she yells at me when I don't have my numbers.
But that's the thing that's important, it's the accountability. It's that you need to track.
100%.
Yeah. Nobody wants to look at it, right?
No.
I think that I that's you're being very transparent now, because I don't like it either. Right? Heck, I don't even like to eat well.
Yeah,
I just like food. Unfortunately, it's a bad thing, but right. I'm pretty good at eating, unfortunately. So one of the things that I think that's kind of a key point that you brought up is this. That phone call comes in, and literally you paid somebody to keep you accountable.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of pain in that.
Mm-hmm. A lot.
Because the money aspect is an exchange. Now, there was an example game not too long ago. What is a $150,000 car to a billionaire?
Bucket.
It literally is like a dollar.
Yeah.
Because there's no real concept of that fee that they're paying.
Right.
Now, if you told them it's going to cost them $850 million, they might think a little bit more about that. Because to them, now we're starting to get into that realm where they're going to feel it a bit more.
Right.
Right. So the same thing, I think, as you go through this process, you pay, whether it be a fitness coach, a dietitian, a personal coach, a business coach, you're doing so because you want the results.
Yeah.
But the accountability they're going to bring to your forefront is what you're paying for.
Yeah. And you know, it makes you want to do things that they tell you to do, because the way I'm looking at it, I paid this much money. I might as well do what she's telling me to do, or I will truly be sleeping on the couch, you know?
You have your PS3.
Right? So we don't want to do that. I am very thankful for my mentors, my coaches, and just, you know, pointing me in the right direction and holding me accountable.
So right? When you're making prospect calls, what is the most common objection you're hearing right now?
The interest rate is too high.
Okay.
I am locked in at 3%. You're crazy. I did not want to sell my house.
Good. So that's the most common one.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about stats. You brought a little bit of detail right now.
I did.
What is is this Bakersfield or is this Kern County? What is this?
You know, I just pulled these this morning.
Okay.
This is Bakersfield.
Okay.
Just not Kern County, because, you know, we fall into Tehachapi.
Sure.
And neighboring cities. So, yeah. So these are the stats.
So let's go through it. Just share the information you think would be relevant to our market right now.
Okay. So all these numbers that I'm about to share, they're current month versus last year.
Okay.
So like September 2022 to September 2023.
Got it.
Right?
It's just so year over year. Recent.
Year over year. So sold price is up 3.5%.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lot, but it's still up 3.5%, right? Number of days on the market is down to 21 days from 28 days. Okay. Last year, this is a big one. Price per square feet was $207. Price per square feet this year, $219.
Yeah.
Market's not going down.
No.
Here's one more. Closed sale inventory is up 30%. All right. I mean, that's a big number. It's in the green. Closed sale, 30% up compared to last year.
So let me ask this question. When you're talking to a prospective client, and they're asking, so what is the market doing? Or why should I sell? Why is now a good time to sell? Would you bring up stats like this?
100%.
And when you're doing so, would it be something that you found is maybe eye-opening for them?
They're not aware. Mm-hmm. They are like, oh, my God, you know, is this really what's going on? Because what we are hearing and seeing is complete opposite.
So, right? You know, you've had somebody, I know they do it to my house. They'll send a little card, or I'll get this random text message. As the owner of such and such address, we'd like to make an offer to purchase your house. Cash. Close in so many days, right? So then you're like, okay, give me $1.5 million and I'll be out by the end of the month, right?
Right.
And it's just sarcastic. The reality is there's no motivation for an to move, right? However,
yeah,
they come to you and say, Alex, okay, I think I want a list. But then they tell you a number. What is your response when they give you a number?
Market stats, right? They could want $500,000 for their home. And realistically speaking, they're like, Alex, I truly think I want $500,000 for my house. And if the numbers back it up, I'll be more than happy to go to work for you, right? Or I'll tell them, hey, look, you know, according to stats, it's worth a little bit more, so why don't we start here? Or according to stats, it's worth a little bit less than $500,000. I really, really, really recommend that that's where you start and get the right amount of exposure right off the bat. And based on the response, that's how we carry that conversation forward.
It's a good point. I think a lot of people have an idea, but they're going to research sites like Zillow, Redfin, Realtor.com, and they're getting these algorithm searches. But a lot of times it's not specific to their property with regards to adjustments that need to be made for condition, age, you know, different upgrades, lot size, views. I mean, believe it or not, there are some homes in town that have views just based off of where they're at, right?
1,000%.
They back up to maybe a golf course or say they're on the lake. So again, these are intangibles that may not be taken into consideration when those algorithms are run. Now, one of the things that we experienced during the year was this outage of Rapitoni.
Yeah.
And all the data that was entered into this MLS system was not available. So the repeating sites that take this data, which is always going to be delayed, were repeating information that wasn't valid at the point. So there was this mad rush to find other data points. And literally, it froze a lot of activity for about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, the appraisers rely upon that data, agent comments, condition. They'll do a physical inspection, but they have to support what they're putting on those appraisals.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal. And I only bring this up because when you don't have data, what you're doing may not be relevant.
And I think it's big, right? You got to educate your client.
Mm-hmm.
It's so important. Like you said, there's so much information out there. Is it all accurate?
Yes.
Right? I have filters in place that I can put in, hey, all single stories are selling for this price,
mm-hmm.
right? All two stories are selling for this price. Are you wanting this dollar amount? That's valid for single story, but your two story is not valid, right? I think if you educate them and you explain them and you show them and you back it up with data, like you said, they are more open. They understand. You know, it's just education, right?
Let's talk about limits, and I'll explain what I mean by it. So when somebody does a strength search for properties, an agent gets a pre-approval for a client, they go out and start looking,
yeah.
and they start sending listing data, there are certain limits that they target. So for example, let's just say somebody is approved to 400,000. So all their searches stop at 400,000 and below in a zone or area that you select. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, you can do that.
Not so, a good idea. When you price a house, though, are you thinking about that in any way, about searchability of your property within an area? And if it's slightly above that, you know, median price or that list price, do you think about that at all?
Yeah. So, for example, like if a client says, let's list my house at 402 or 405, right? It's a nice round number. I want a little bit over 400. I'd say it's a very bad idea because these little drop boxes or their search limits are 100 to 200, 200 to 300,
that's my point.
300 to 400. So if you are 405, you just missed out on all these buyers.
Yeah.
But if you're at 399.9, just right underneath that 400, you have all that exposure. And that goes a long way.
So that's a good point. Here's something that is a tip I think that real estate agents should take into consideration. If you know you're just above a limit or just below a limit, or you're somewhere in that range that could be not as easily searchable, you need to make that information publicly available. Social media, you know, get it out there, because the more exposure you have of that listing to the general public,
better.
Yeah, and guess what? People know when other people are making life decisions. Why? Because they discuss it. That might be, hey, my sister-in-law is actually looking for a house and they want to be in this particular school district. Hey, this house came up. I saw it on Facebook. Call the agent, right? So you're really not doing yourself any justice at all by just putting on the MLS.
Yeah, you're cutting yourself short.
Yeah, you need to have as much exposure as possible. Yeah.
You know, I actually tell other agent partners in Bakersfield,
sure,
share my listings on social media. Feel free. You don't even have to call and ask for permission. Like, hey, you guys all have my permission. to share all my listings at any given time.
And it's also a good idea to call lenders.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. There are dormant borrowers out there that have been pre-qualified, and some of them they've not communicated with. And you can rekindle that opportunity and kind of bring them up to speed with what market rates are doing,
yeah.
what new payments might be. But if there's a house that fits their needs, the lender typically doesn't know that. You know why? Because we don't see houses. We only have loan amounts that they're pre-approved for. Mm-hmm. They don't communicate with us
right.
what area they're looking in.
Yeah. I actually have a list put together of all the lenders. Well, I think majority of the lenders in town. I think you get those emails mm-hmm. now, right? Where whenever I take a listing, those emails go out specifically to a lot of the agents and lenders, you know, highlighting the key features and the sales price. I have a note on there. Feel free to share on your social media.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think it's so important, too. Yeah.
I think it's all about exposure.
Yeah.
And if absolutely. Anything, you are just really doing your best for your listing.
Yeah.
You're telling the seller, listen, I am getting the word out.
Yeah.
It's not this sign that's in front of the house.
It's really
not. No, because, no. I mean, that only goes so far.
Yeah.
And if anything, yeah. most open houses, 50% of your first visitors are going to be the neighbors. Right?
Yeah.
And they're going to come in.
They come in and tell you, oh, we're just looking around.
Yeah. And one of the questions that you always can ask is this. So do you know anybody who wants to be your neighbor? Right? Yeah. Do you have a family member, friend, somebody else that you want to move in the neighborhood? Right? Yeah.
And the response is no.
For me, so, at least. Yeah. Well, it's like, yeah, I can always call you. Yeah. Right? I mean, yeah. I don't need you to be in my backyard yeah. too much into my business. So let's go ahead and transition into the last part of this. And it's going to be this. What has been your aha moment this last year of things that maybe something that stood out that was like, wow, that's something I can implement change that I think is good for myself and those that I serve?
So the aha moment, what do you mean, like on a business level?
It could be business, it could be personal, it could be anything. You know,
on a business level, I think the aha moment is keeping in touch with your clients, okay. right? This is very recent. I mean, this past weekend, recent, you know, for all the buyer clients and a few sellers that I've done transaction with this year, I've decided to personally pay them a visit, right, over the weekend and take them a pie. Say, hey, thank you so much for being a client in 2023. We really appreciate you and your business. And the response that I've got is mind-blowing. So welcoming, so warm. You almost feel like a family member, you know? And it's so great. So that was a very big aha moment, right? I mean, these clients, I mean, they've turned into families, right? They all know about the family. You know, they know about my baby. They know about my wife. They know what I do. They know what my wife does. It goes a long, long way.
Yeah. I think you become human, right? Yeah. You're a real person.
Yeah.
And you have a goal to serve them in the best way you know how.
Super important.
Yeah. So one of the things that we've jokingly talked about on the podcast is this. If you have a giftedness, mm-hmm. you need to stay within that lane. Mm-hmm. Just because you have MD behind your name doesn't mean you work on every part of the body. Okay? So your podiatrist should not be removing your tonsils.
I hope not.
There was a chapter
yeah.
in medical school, right?
Right. Yeah.
But your area of giftedness is yeah. sales of real estate, transactions, and you can guide people down that path because you've done it so many times.
Yeah.
And you've seen what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
But that is a perspective that can only be had through repetition,
right? Absolutely, yeah.
So we'll end on this because I know this is a big deal for a lot of agents out there. The biggest, scariest, worst thing that most people don't like to hear is the word no.
Right.
How did you get past objections?
Well, I mean, they're saying no because of their personal reasons. It's not because they hate you. They dislike you or they don't care about you. It's because they're not in the position to make a decision. They have stuff going on. Maybe you just caught them at a bad time, right? I've had then call my very own clients were having a bad day and they let me have it. But then they call back and they apologize. Alex, I was so caught up. I am so sorry. I ran over a nail and I was just having the day. And you happened to call. Right? That's more than a little bit of a no than, you know, but it's not because of you. It's because of them, right? They're in a different position.
Yeah.
So don't let that offend you. Don't let that hold you back. You know, you just try again later.
Yeah. Right? Well, that's powerful. Alex, yeah. time went very quickly. I really appreciate you coming on.
Pleasure
and hopefully so we can get some information to help yeah. not only potential customers, but other agents and lenders. At the end of the day, I'm about giving.
Yeah.
You know, because we all, like I said, have talents and skills. And we want to give those things because each person earns the opportunity to work with somebody.
Yeah.
But do your best. You know, if you're representing a buyer, you're representing a seller, you're representing a client that's doing financing, do your job well, because the team is what closes that transaction.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I just want to say, communicate. Whether you are a client, communicate with your agents, your loan officer, whether you are other professional in industry, communicate with everybody.
Yeah.
Escrow officers, loan officers, everybody, right? Yeah. It just makes life a whole lot easier.
Yeah. Excellent. Thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate it.